Now, earlier this week, I interviewed Dev Patel and Anil Kapoor, who star in Slumdog Millionaire. That's part of my other podcast, The Daily Mail, which you can download at the 5 Live website. And if you get there before the end of Monday, the 12th of January, you'll find my interview with Slumdog's director, the great Danny Boyle, as well.
This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Good afternoon, Dr. Mark Cummins. Thank you for this coffee and a happy new year to you. How did you order this coffee?
Say? I just said two black coffees because you know what? Here in the BBC, we don't have any of that venti nonsense.
Said two black coffees?
Yeah, because it's the guy outside the door.
But normally, you said Americano, venti.
No. That's only in the big chains, isn't it? And also, it's not true that if you go into a coffee, just say, I'll have two black coffees. They will give you two black coffees. I mean, it does get sorted out. They don't, because they hear it 25 times a day.
I think he's onto something.
Well, I tell you, two black coffees works for me.
Yeah, you see, Graham in Staffordshire, I just asked for a big coffee in my own very personal battle of the beverages. I was asked, was this Shane in Liverpool, in Melbourne, where I grew up. To get a normal cup of coffee, you would have to ask for a tall black with milk on the side.
I get a lot. I spend an awful lot of time on trains because, as you know, I live miles away. And the thing that you get on a train is, you say, "Would you want black?" I say, "What do you want?" They say, "A black coffee." They say, "Do you want milk and sugar with it?"
Yeah.
No, I want a black coffee. If I had milk with it, it wouldn't be a black coffee. I mean, but you know.
Steve says, if you ask for a latte in Pizza Express without checking the menu, and you get an Americano with froth, this is because they put two shots of espresso in their lattes. Latte, one shot, put two in, it ceases to be a latte.
I don't even know what latte means.
It's a milky coffee.
Is it?
Hmm.
But you see, you drink all this stuff. I drink black coffee, but you have the,
I like the espresso with water, which is commonly known as an Americano. No, nothing with milk.
Well, I just have black coffee, and the guy outside understood exactly what I meant. I said, "Hi, I'll have two black coffees." He said, "Fine, how are you?"
Robert in Barcelona. Dear Vicky Cristina.
Barcelona.
I'm writing on behalf of my 89-year-old mother, who still makes the effort to listen to your film reviews and check out the latest films you recommend. Unlike her son, who downloads your excellent podcast and can listen free of traffic updates, news summaries and late starts in sunny Barcelona.
People listen specifically for that stuff.
She religiously sits down with her trusty DAB radio at the advertised time of 3 o'clock and then becomes increasingly frustrated as she waits and waits for the film reviews to start. You could make her life more enjoyable by announcing at 3 o'clock when said film reviews will in fact start so that she can do something more meaningful with her time. Well, my honest guess is
17 minutes past. We'll do the top 10 up until quarter past, and then we'll probably start the film reviewing stuff about 17 minutes past. So if you're listening on a podcast, you probably want to fast forward to 10 minutes in.
I've got a few emails, bits and pieces. First of all, Bill, still reading for a D-Lit in Michelle Pfeiffer studies. Dear Dr. Matt and Dr. Smith, following his unforgettable exploits at Christmas, would Dr. K be prepared to offer us a review entirely through the medium of bagpipe melodies?
Can I tell you what I did for New Year's Eve? I'll be very quick
what
about
did
it.
You, yeah, what I, did you do for New Year's Eve?
I stood out on the weirs, and as I promised, I did when I got the bagpipes in July, I stood out on the weirs and I played the New Year in, and I thought the whole street would come out and applaud. And there was a silence descended upon the entire show. It was almost like everyone, because we told everyone that I was going to do it. It was almost like everyone had got together and said, Mark's going to play the bagpipes. Let's all pretend not to hear him. And I did. I played about 5-10 minutes.
It could be that they were all in their beds with the pillows over their heads, thinking, the last thing I want to hear at this time is a bagpipe played by
my bagpipe playing's actually not bad now.
Duncan Mansfield, MS. CI, physics with astrophysics, chartered engineer, Longleat Maze speed record holder. Dear Newman and Badil, Happy New Year. I saw the good doctor alongside his family in my local over the festive period. I was tempted to introduce myself, but felt he would rather not spend a Christmas afternoon debating the quantum of solace question of sport, which I actually enjoyed as much more consistent return to the Bond format after the girly overrated Casino Royale. Sensing his and his family's relief, the good doctor ensured my pool game was not disturbed by his party's children itching ever closer to the nearby Wii console.
Oh, okay, fine.
I salute you, sir, says Duncan. box office top 10.
Yes.
A lot of good stuff today. Slumdog Millionaire, we've got Defiance, Bride Wars. At least two of those are very good. I haven't seen Bride Wars.
Yeah, you haven't seen Bride Wars.
Don't like the poster.
No. Have you seen the moving poster on the tubes?
Not of Bride Wars, I don't think.
There's a moving poster, actually, there's certainly one in Waterloo Station of Goldie Hawn and Kate Hudson hitting each other. you know, hilariously, and then turning towards the camera and going and smiling, Bride Wars, and it's on, and it's been on a loop for the whole week. And of course, I have to come through Waterloo every day, and I am really, whatever I think of the movie, I'm ready to put my foot through the moving poster.
Box office 10, then Inkheart at number 10.
You know, I liked it very much, and I think it did okay over the holidays. I'd like it to have done better. Of course, one of the reasons I think it's had a bit of a rough time is because we'll jump to number two, is because Bedtime Stories is in at number two, and Bedtime Stories is a massively inferior film, and nothing like as inventive or funny or intelligent, and just because they have a similar theme, which is to do with stories coming to life, and Bedtime Stories seems to have sort of more clout behind it. But if you haven't seen Inkheart yet, do go and see it. It is really well worth seeing.
Peter on this email says, I instructed the family and a few hangers-on that we had to go and see Inkheart, as Mark said it was a good family film.
Has this got a big butt coming?
It has to be said that the opinion of the good doctor is now in its ascendancy in the Gedge-Jones household, as all enjoyed it. I gave the boy Reuben my best interpretation of what the story might be about prior to going in. Sensitive lad, don't want to frighten him too much.
Yeah.
He seemed fairly non-committal at that stage. 5 minutes into the film, he announced to the entire cinema that he'd read the book. Obviously says a lot for my narrative skills. Santa bought him the remaining two of the trilogy just to keep him quiet.
I think the book's actually called Inkheart, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
Yeah, well, how could he have read it without not realising that that was what it was?
I asked the Nipper if he wanted to go and see Yes Man, to which he responded,
No Man.
Bit early doors for an Obama biopic.
Oh, very good. Very good.
It's not bad, is it?
But, you know, I thought he was going to do No Man's Better Than Snowman.
Shape Part 1, is it 9?
Yeah, Che. I got picked up on this because I did a blog about it, and people wrote in saying, it's not Shay, it's Che. Shay, as in Shay. So the reason I say Shay, and somebody said to me, why do you say Shay as opposed to Che? And I know why I do. It's because of that joke in the Ruttles, when they say the
Shay Stadium.
Exactly.
Named the after Ruttles, the famous guerrilla leader,
Shay Stadium. And that's why I say Shay Guevara, because it is Che. So this is Che Part 1. Part 2, still to come. And storming central performance by Benicio del Toro. Certainly one of the best things that we saw in Cannes. Although the funny thing was, when they showed it in Cannes, they showed the two parts together, which comes to a total of about 6 hours. And in the middle, there was a break. And you had like 20 minutes break, and then you had to go back in again. And everyone came out of the Palais, and they were given these Che survival bags, which had in them sort of little foil-wrapped sandwiches and a very non-revolutionary Kit Kat with which you were supposed to revive yourself before piling back in for more of the revolution. And then we were trying to go back into the thing, and the guys, the French guys, said, oh, no, you cannot come in with the food. We said, but you've just given us the food. No, you cannot come in. You have to eat the food out there. They were Spanish, French guys, obviously. And for one moment, we as critics, inspired by the revolutionary fervour of Che, thought, we'll just storm in, right? We'll take what we need and we'll storm in. And then they said, if you do that, we will take away your pink pass. So I went, all right, sorry, put the bag down and went back in like that.
Do you think you reacted like that because you were a revolutionary socialist and, you know, you just for a moment you thought, inspired by your Kit Kat, you might be able to do something?
No, I wasn't inspired by the Kit Kat. I boycotted the Kit Kat.
Why?
It's what? Nestle. You know, everyone boycotts Nestle.
A Kit Kat can be revolutionary if all you're used to is, you know, plain chocolate. A Kit Kat could be a revolution.
Simon, you have so much to learn. Let me tell you about South African oranges. Oh,
eight,
no, that's all changed.
Number
now,
eight the day. Yeah, you really need to move on
two. The reason I mention that is because there's a thing in Local Hero when the orange washes up on the beach and he finds it and he's about to eat it and then he goes, oh, it's South African.
The day the earth stood still at number eight.
Yeah, the day Keanu Reeves didn't do anything other than stand there and go, I am Klaatu.
Now, number seven, it's The Reader. A couple of emails here. Dick Quiff and Spike went to see The Reader, says Mark Barry, BSc Ons, PGDE. With high expectations.
What's PGDE?
Postgraduate Degree in Education.
Okay, good.
I'm just guessing.
Yeah.
Because it's a bit like a PGCE, which is Postgraduate Certificate in Education.
Okay, is it?
It is.
Okay, and they don't do O levels anymore, do they?
No, they don't. All school certificate.
Yeah. And South Africa's all fine now.
I went to see The Reader, and the Empire largely doesn't exist. With high expectations due to good reviews and an excellent pedigree. However, I left disappointed. Mm-hmm. Although the performances were good and the writing was good and the cinematography was good and the directing was good, I think too many goods in this sentence, the whole thing felt like watching a play at the National Theatre. Kate Winslet was perfectly fine, but had all the hallmarks of please give me an Oscar performance about it. She's so desperate to campaign like this, why doesn't she call herself Kate Pamphlet? Tim in Manchester. Dear Rosemary in Time, just wondered if the good doctor could answer a question for me regarding The Reader.
Yeah.
I absolutely love the performance by Kate Winslet in the film, but wondered how she is nominated for Best Supporting Actress at the Golden Globes when she's the only person to be in the film from beginning to end and indeed the only lead female. Surely she should be best actress in a lead role.
And also, why is it that on the poster there's a picture of her young and Ralph Fiennes young, and yet that doesn't ever happen in the film in that way? I have all those reservations about the film. I mean, you look at it and you think, well, it's a solidly built piece of work, but so what? And, you know, they want to be echoes of The Night Porter, but I think there are, you know, in the back of my mind, whenever I watch a movie like that, I just think, yeah, well, I've seen this all done before in exploitation movies, rather more interestingly. And it's like, yeah, it's right. But it's terribly sort of, you know, on the one hand, but on the other hand. And I was rather underwhelmed by the whole thing. We're doing it on Newsnight Review tonight, incidentally. So I'm going to have a row with somebody about it, probably.
Why will you have a row with someone?
Well, I don't know that everybody agrees with me because I'm, you know.
But if they agree with you, then you can't go.
That's fine. If they agree with me, then we won't have a row. We'll move swiftly on. It'll be a very uninteresting round.
Take a bar of chocolate, feel revolutionary. You never know what's going to happen.
No, the bar of chocolate is not revolutionary. You have to understand this. You can't storm the barricades whilst eating a Kit Kat.
The Spirit is at 6.
Yes, I haven't seen The Spirit.
Well, why not?
Because I was away.
How much time off do you need?
I took your advice. You said have a holiday, but I'd very much like to hear if anybody has seen it. I have heard only bad things about it.
It's Twilight at number 5.
Which I liked very much.
Oh,
and,
yes.
You know, I thought it did exactly what it said on the packet, and you took a teenage daughter to go and see it. And
I took my teenage daughter. I didn't take a teenage daughter. That would have been inappropriate.
You know what happened with that sentence, actually? I started it to say you took a teenage girl to it, and then I realised that wasn't going
that
to work out
worse.
Properly, and that's why I changed me to say I'm sorry. And yes.
And she's since been to see it on 2 other occasions.
Oh, really?
Paying for
so
it
she's
herself.
So she's seen it thrice.
A first.
Wow.
She's seen it thrice. That's
thrice
how much she
times.
Loves it.
Wow. Well, I think it really does the job very well, and it is true. The only downside of it is that the woman who plays the lead girl in it is moany and then some. But then I didn't see her at the premiere being moany as well.
No, absolutely, she's very moany. Australia's at 4. Jack Blackburn in Sussex.
What, all of it?
Dear Amitabh Bachchan and Shahrukh Khan.
Very good.
Happy New Year to you both, and I hope you had an enjoyable Christmas break. Very nice, Jack. Thank you. I would like to thank you both, as your combined efforts certainly aided my enjoyment of the last few weeks. On Boxing Day, I followed the good doctor's advice and went to see Australia, which was fantastic fun.
Good.
It is utterly ridiculous, should end an hour before it does, and is somewhat less than the sum of its parts. But when those parts are huge actions parts, what's the problem?
Yes.
He also has a point about Slumdog, which we'll get to.
Okay.
Oh, I just wanted to. Later on, I saw a preview screening of Slumdog, which I'd been waiting for since Dr. Mayer's enthusiastic reception of it at the London Film Festival. The film is absolutely electric, gripping, vibrant and hugely entertaining. Keep up the Wittertainment for 2009. Madagascar, Escape to Africa at 3. We'll get on to Slumdog later.
Yeah,
of course,
more of the same, if not less of the same. You know, just more of the same, but less. It's just more of the same, but it's less, you know, because it's not the original, and the original wasn't that fabulous anyway. And once again, Sacha Baron Cohen does that act that steals the show. There's about 10 minutes of funny Sacha Baron Cohen stuff in it.
Bedtime Stories is at number 2.
Go see Inkheart. Number 10, much better.
I had to go and see Bedtime Stories.
It's hard work, isn't it? But you saw Inkheart, didn't you?
No, I haven't seen Inkheart.
Ah, well, it's harder work if you've seen Inkheart, because you just think, yeah, I kind of saw a film that's vaguely similar to this, but good.
It's charmless. That was my problem.
It has no magic.
I love all that fantasy. That's really good. But
it has no magic. It has no magic, and that's exactly what Inkheart does. It has magic.
UK's number 1 is Yes Man.
No Man.
What?
Well, for a start, it's the Dice Man, except it isn't. And it thinks it's really funny, except it isn't. And it's described in the press notes as being an attempt to bring together the two sides of Jim Carrey's career, the wacky, funny side and the Truman Show side, except it doesn't. And it's just, so I thought the pithy way of doing that was to say No Man. In fact, funnily enough, I'd been building up to that.
What movie's coming up first?
Shall we do Bride Wars first?
We've got plenty of time. You can do whatever you wish.
The stuff we have to get through, we have to do Bride Wars. I'd like to have a quick word with you about role models.
Right.
Because
on-air conversation?
Yeah,
an
on-air conversation. I can either do it now, or shall we wait till we've had the travel?
What else do we have to do?
We have to do Slumdog Millionaire. Yes. I'd like to do Stuck, which is the Stuart Gordon movie, which is terrifically good fun, in which Stephen Ray is stuck in a windscreen. That's the story of
all
the
film. All that to come, and it's only 3:18, so for Robert Campbell's mum listening in Barcelona, or as someone's pointing out, if she's sitting down at 3 p.m. in Spain, she's an hour too early for the film reviews. Thanks, Daz, for pointing that out. Dear Paul and Barry, says Alex.
Very good.
They're the Chuckle Brothers.
I know who they are.
I'm just explaining it for
people.
Did
you know that they're actually brothers?
I think we've had this conversation.
Yeah. Did you
before.
Know that? They're not father and son. They're actually brothers.
I've been listening through some of the old reviews on the website, and at least twice I heard Mark unforgivably use the phrase, I could care less. What are you doing? That doesn't mean anything. It literally means nothing. If it were to imply anything, it would be that you care somewhat. but that's clutching at straws. It's I couldn't care less. Why are you like this?
Well, there's somebody else has written on the website about me saying absolutely with a P as opposed to a B. So would you stop saying absolutely? It's driving me absolutely mad. Well, it wasn't until I'd read that I had any awareness of saying absolutely, but apparently I do. Incidentally, we should tell the listening world that I was on the breakfast show just the other day and you sent me a really cross text which said, ooh, so you're talking to Nikki Campbell, but not me.
Well, I'd rung you up.
And Happy New Year to you too.
And you hadn't even bothered to reply.
Yeah, what you do is this. You ring, right? You get the answer phone and 2 minutes later you send a text saying you don't ring.
Is this our on-air or off-air conversation?
No, but that's the on-air conversation which we should have now.
About?
Did you see Role Models?
Yes.
Right. Now, if I'm not wrong, James King is all over the poster for that. And somebody correct me if I am, because I saw this on a train going past after having been sort of annoyed by the Bride Wars advert again. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, that there's a quote by James King which says, hilariously funny, laugh out loud, boy, my side's nearly split. Now, I know that a standard line is that I don't get comedy, right? This is something that other people say. They say, oh, Mark, he just doesn't get comedy. That's why he doesn't get super bad and all the rest of it. Role Models was terribly average to below par at very, very best. And I was told that you thought it was very funny.
No, I didn't find it was very funny. It's exactly the kind of film that I don't particularly like, but I found myself laughing in spite of myself because of the coffee stuff.
During the coffee scene?
During the coffee scene, but also later when...
the kids swearing stuff?
I didn't like... Well, that's why I mentioned... I said to Paul Rowe, the kids swearing, I didn't think was very nice. But the bit at the end where he has the little speech about looking like Marvin Hamlish, I thought that was... How many times do you have to laugh out loud for it to be...
I'd say five or six. And incidentally,
I probably
the Marvin Hamlish thing, the gag at the end, he says, Marvin Hamlish, who was he? He's the guy who did the music for The Sting. Actually, the thing that everyone remembers about The Sting is that the music for it is by Scott Joplin. I mean, it was bizarre. It was like even that gag went...
It isn't my kind of film at all.
It's the Marvin Hamlish gag.
All I'm saying is if the barrier is at five, I probably got to five just before the closing.
Did you?
It would not be my...
I thought your interview with him, which I was listening to, was funnier than the film. And the other funny thing about it was
that you didn't find it funny. So
no, I found it... But also, it was funny that he seemed to be doing a number on the film himself. He said, let's not talk about the film.
Let's
talk about something else. And even he didn't. He wrote it.
What do you want?
I want somebody to text me in what that James King comment is on the poster. Because I've had a complete misfire in my brain. It actually said somebody else. If anyone's standing there, what is it that James King is quoted as saying? Because I am going to have to take this up with him. I mean, in a really parental way.
Aaron in Swinton, by the way, just on the coffee conversation. What are you about to review, by the way?
Bride Wars.
With apologies to Robert Campbell's mum, who's still waiting for a review. Says, Simon, in 2006, my wife and I went to Canada on our honeymoon. Whilst travelling through the country, we stopped at a coffee chain in the middle of nowhere. I wanted a filter coffee for my wife and a cappuccino for me. The famous Italian coffee, of course. She said, do you want French vanilla or English toffee?
I said, I don't want a porn film. I'd like a cup of coffee.
I want the frothy coffee from Italy. She said, no, you don't understand, and proceeded to pour me a little cup of vanilla coffee. I said, that's it. Two filter coffees to go. Thanks very much. The world is nuts.
It is, okay.
So this is a first film review. Robert Campbell's mum, this is for you.
This was the first film back of 2009 for me, and it was one of those things when you go... It's the first film I've seen in 2009, and I'm already fast-forwarding to the end of 2009 and thinking, if this is not in my top 10 worst of the year, top 5 worst of the year, then the year will have been so bad that I make you this promise now. If Bride Wars isn't in my top 10 worst films of the year, if there are 10 films worse than Bride Wars this year, I quit. Okay? So, literally, bear this in mind.
Don't say that, because then people will hold you to it. And
I know, but,
inconvenient
but it's like, every now and then you have to make a stand, and this is it. If the state of play
you can make a stand over Kit Kats, but it's no point making a stand over Bride Wars.
Simon, you don't have to see them. You didn't have to sit there and watch Bride Wars, okay?
Yeah, but I'm not a film reviewer.
No, but I am, right?
Well, that's all right.
Yeah, that's fine. And if there are 10 films worse than Bride Wars this year, I quit, okay? So, there are two Anne Hathaway movies at the moment which are, Anne Hathaway nuptial projects. One of them is Rachel Getting Married, which is directed by Jonathan Demme, which is this kind of edgy, handheld affair about these really horrible people who, you're meant to kind of empathise with, but you don't. But it's for your consideration. And then we have this, which is this not edgy, not handheld movie about horrible people who you're meant to find funny, but you don't, which is for your money. And the story is Anne Hathaway and Kate Hudson are two close friends, and they've grown up together with dreams of weddings. Ever since they were little girls, they dreamt about weddings. And now they're both going out with boys who are both going to propose to them, and they're going to have weddings. But you never guess what? They both dream of having the same wedding, and oh, the coincidence, on the same day and in the same place. That's going to create a clash of loyalties. Here's a clip.
At the end of the day, I want you at my wedding, and whichever way this works out, one of us will just have to be married on a different day.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I want you at my wedding, too, obviously. If we can't think of any other way out of this, one of us will simply have to be flexible.
Yeah, one of us will just have to change venues.
Right, one of us could.
Probably not the one of us who's been saving up for a decade because she makes a pittance compared to the other one of us, but...
True. I mean, or it would be if the other one of us wasn't so desperate to get married to the Plaza, because the Plaza practically is the only happy memory she has of her childhood. So, oops, that's right.
One of us will have to move her date.
Yep, one of us will.
And until one of us decides, we shouldn't make any concrete plans.
Agreed. There's some time before we lock things in. Let's just not do anything.
Right.
Until one of us moves her date.
Okay, so, talk to you soon. One of us should call the other one.
Did you deliberately choose the worst clip from the movie? Then?
No, that's the one. That's the clip. Do you hear the music in the background? Bucky, 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 funny, jolly, ha, 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 ha. Now, everyone will tell you it's a chick flick. Only in the sense that if you ground it up and fed it to battery hens, it might be better served than running it through a projector.
I know quite a few battery hens who want to go and see this film. What am I saying?
So, look, where do we begin with the problems, OK? Because obviously what they do is, you know, the rivalry breaks out, they switch each other's videos, they switch each other's hair dye, so one of them ends up with blue hair, they switch...
Don't spoil it.
This is all in the trailer.
That's a plot spoiler.
No, oh, fine. I've given away the thing about one of them ends up with blue hair. You know what? If you saw the trailer and one of them's walking around with blue hair, guess what? It was the other one what did it. And that goes on for a while. So, now, Anne Hathaway, she's okay. And I don't have a problem with Anne Hathaway. She has done some very good movies. She was in things like, she was in Brokeback Mountain. She was in Princess Diaries, which is okay. She's been in some real stiffs as well, like Havoc, which is a really, really terrible movie. And then she's in, you know, Rachel Getting Married, which she's now being sort of touted as a kind of awards contender. Kate Hudson, on the other hand, completely different matter. Kate Hudson has been in loads and loads of rubbish movies alongside one good movie, which is Almost Famous. And Kate Hudson, for this, and much is made of this in the press notes, makes her producing debut. And she says, I really wanted to do a movie that was about women pushing the comedic envelope. Well, how is the comedic envelope pushed? Well, firstly, it's pushed by giving us two female characters who say, with completely straight faces, there's nothing in the world better than Vera Wang. And we're meant to think that this is, you know, this is perfectly acceptable. Okay, so secondly, she casts herself as a high-powered lawyer. Kate Hudson, right? Kate Hudson is a high-powered lawyer. That comes up in about the first 5 minutes, and that's the point at which I go, sorry, leaving. No, Kate Hudson's not a high-powered lawyer. Not having that. I mean, I buy Kate Hudson as the sort of ditzy floozy in Almost Famous. That's fine. Kate Hudson's a high-powered lawyer? No. Seriously.
This is similar to your Meg Ryan as a helicopter pilot.
Yeah, well, that's it. Funnily exactly enough, it's exactly the same as that. Meg Ryan is a helicopter pilot. Kate Hudson is a high-powered lawyer. Neither of the two are true. Secondly, thirdly, it's a film which asks you to laugh at the following joke, OK? Kate Hudson, right, who looks like this, OK? She gets into a dress...
Like a puckered-up lip, okay. Sucked a lemon.
Really thin, OK? She gets into a dress that is apparently a size, I don't know, nil or something, right? And then the gag is... you never get this, it's so funny. Anne Hathaway gets her to eat lots of chocolate, right? And she gets really fat, so she can't fit into the dress. So she gets into the dress and she tries to do it up, still looking... to zip it up. She says, oh, I'm too fat to get into the dress. Now, number of problems. Firstly, in physical terms, she's even less existent than in kind of intellectual. I mean, she has less of a physical presence than she does as a production thing. You know, she just is not there. Turn around, not there. Okay, no, fine. Secondly...
She needs a Kit Kat.
While she does, but not a one that we're boycotting. Doing the gag about being too fat to get into the dress, the camera is looking at her, incredibly skinny, and apparently not being able to... But it's like she said, now look, here's how the gag's going to work, okay? The thing is, I've eaten a bunch of chocolate.
She's a gay New York man.
She is. I've really put on such a lot of weight, you're never going to believe it. But the thing is, obviously, I haven't really put on
weight. It's Frank.
Because I'm Kate Hudson.
From Father of the Bride.
Okay? As Kate Hudson, I'm not really like that. So what I want you to do, you do the angle from behind so you see the zip, okay? The zip won't go up, but at the same same time, make sure it's on display that I'm not really fat. I'm making a joke about being fat, but I'm not really fat. Because I want people to laugh at the idea of me being fat, but I don't want anyone to think I'm actually fat, okay? Because I'm a lawyer, but I'm not fat. I'm thin, but I'm pretending to be fat.
Fine, I challenge that. You to do that on Newsnight Review. That will be fantastic.
Then, third point. Apparently, at some point in the production process, she's fallen asleep in a vat of plastic, right? And it's gone like this. And her whole face has locked like that. So Anne Hathaway, who is all eyebrows and teeth, here's an Anne Hathaway performance.
Meanwhile, like a fish. I'm having to interpret this all television.
Eyebrows. No, fine. Meanwhile, literally,
skin like
she
this,
looks
face like this. Describe
like
what
she's
doing.
Okay, fine. Imagine if you got if
fine
you got,
on the webcam. The lights are on.
Don't do this at home, right? If you get what do you call it, cling film, right, and you wrapped it around your face with your fringe down, right, that would be what Kate Hudson's performance is like. Meanwhile, if you got a Moulinex mincer and put it on either side of your eyebrows, don't do this at home. And your eyebrows were going up and down, that would be Kate Hudson's performance. So what you have is, on the one hand, a performance of a face which has no movement. On the other hand, the performance of a face which is all eyebrows and teeth. Now, for some reason, somebody's got it into their head that this is hilariously funny. And, you know, and the funniest scene in the movie that actually made me wonder whether the ghost of Harold Pinter wasn't actually hanging over all this, is there's a scene in which two characters argue about their wedding plans while somebody else sits in the background doing their tax returns. I mean, you think, oh, I get it, right? It's not meant to be a chick flick. It's meant to be a hideous existential drama that makes you lose the will to live. And it's actually peopled by, you know, strange walk-ons from the Stepford Wife. That's what it is. It's a satire. And then I go, no, it's not. It's a movie that's not funny. And it's 2009, and everything's starting really bad. And I'm going to say
so
it
again. Take a Moulinex and a cling film.
No, obviously don't do any of these things, because if you do, you'll hospitalise yourself. But I'm trying to paint a picture with words, like that bloke describing the fleets lit up. You know, I'm trying to paint
well,
a picture.
Well, you were trying, apart from doing impressions, which were ridiculous on the radio, because I had to describe them, unless you're watching on the webcam, because the lights are on and it's being live streamed.
Okay.
Some answers to questions.
Not
news
funny,
and then
then.
Some more. Simon Tutton, the poster. You're asking for the James King poster.
Yeah. What's the quote?
Simon and many others say the poster states jam-packed with big, big belly laughs. Role models is genius. James King.
Do it again, because you did his voice. That was it. Go on.
I didn't. Jam-packed with big, big belly laughs. Role models is genius.
James, if you're listening, see me after class. Because, role models is genius.
Sharon from Holloway. I'm sitting in the Waitrose car park waiting for the Slumdog review. Need to do the shopping. Please do it first.
But I was told to build to it.
Don't give away all the production secrets. What you mean is leave the best till last.
Yes,
I think that's
right.
The phrase you're looking for. Ian in Chorley, I saw The Spirit on opening day. It's every bit as bad as reported. I'm sure some comic geeks will like it, but for me it was all style over substance, awful dialogue, pointless plot, scenes that go on at least twice as long as they should do. By the end, it's very hard to care.
Which film was this?
For anything. Spirit, as
oh,
I said.
Spirit. Fine.
Confusing bit was where I said, I saw The Spirit on opening day.
No, but you swallowed it. You went, I saw on opening day like that.
Richard in Leicester, I offered to see Spirit with my son if no one else would go with him, even though I didn't really fancy it. Luckily for me, he found somebody to go with and thought it was rubbish. And quickly this one, Lizzie Campbell, MA, History and Philosophy of Science and Medicine, and various other things which she shows off about, including grade 7 violin. Dearest Darren Kelly, each
don't say that dismissively. Grade 7 violin is incredibly impressive.
No, well, there's lots of others.
I'm going to do bagpipe grades.
Each has something to avoid. Each month I look forward to the delivery of my latest copy of Empire, much in the same way as I look forward to the weekly film reviews with The Good Doctor and The Doctor That Is Not, either listened to covertly on my computer at work or at a later time via the podcast. However, this month I was reading the letters in the newest version of Empire, only to discover a request from a reader on the letters for the letters page editor to ask his girlfriend to stop blowing her nose on her pants. Following the same request being made on your show only a few weeks ago, I was compelled to bring this to your attention. Could this be the same perpetrator? I'd be most interested to hear your thoughts.
It has to be a hoax, hasn't it? It has to be a hoax.
Almost certainly it's the same person who thought it. Boy, that was funny on the radio. Let's see if it's funny on a page.
Okay.
Guess what? It isn't.
Yeah.
What's next, good doctor?
Well, I could do Slumdog next just to satisfy the listeners.
Clearly, we're building up to that.
Let's do Sex Drive.
So if you're sitting in a Waitrose car park waiting for it, just
wait.
Just hang on a little bit longer. laugh at all the people jostling for position, check what everyone's buying, and then we'll do you Slumdog Millionaire.
Yes.
This is Five Live. We have some movies. Only 20 minutes. I think we need at least another hour more. But anyway,
yeah,
Sparky in Wellingborough. Dear Pants and Ting, on the strength of your Bride Wars clip, I saved the price of admission. Thank you and God help us all.
Good.
Stephen Coventry, Mark, you're making me want to see Bride Wars now.
Oh, dear.
This says, oh, got another idea. Make Bride Wars meet Hunger. Hunger Wars 2. Stuck-up brides get locked into prison, beaten and starved until one of them gives up acting. What do you think?
I think bad taste is a wonderful thing.
Steve says, of course Kit Kats are revolutionary. If you buy one in Japan, it comes in green tea and salt flavour. I'm willing to bet this was the first York-designed confectionery that ended up in Japan full of green tea and salt, ergo revolutionary. Ian in Wimbledon, Mark, you should have changed your Kit Kat to a Garibaldi biscuit.
Very good.
And Mark says, dear you two, this is better than TV on the webcam. The lights are on, you can watch it, it's live streamed. What do we do next?
Well, let's do Defiance, since you said let's do Defiance next, and I always do what you tell me. You are.
Defiance next, please.
New movie by Ed Zwick, who's directed in the past Glory, which I really liked. Legends of the Fall, Courage Under Fire, Meg Ryan is a helicopter pilot, Last Samurai, Blood Diamond, and others. Courage is particularly... not Courage, Glory is a particularly interesting case because I remember interviewing Morgan Freeman. There was coming up to the awards season, and he had both Glory and Driving Miss Daisy out, and he really wasn't interested in Driving Miss Daisy at all, but he wanted to talk about Glory because the thing with Ed Zwick is he's a very sort of solid director. You know, he puts tab A into slot B and makes solid action movies, but they always have some kind of social conscience and they're about things. I mean, he makes films that are, you know, to some extent issue movies, but they are definitely sort of mainstream issue movies. So the story here, which is based on a true story, which may be widely known, I have to say I didn't know about it, which is the true story of the Bielski partisans, who were a group of rural Jews who were essentially fighting back in the Belarusian forests in World War II. The author of the book was on the Today programme earlier on this week and was talking very interestingly about the research that they'd done and about the movie itself, and saying that the most important thing was that there was a story out there that demonstrated that actually during the horrors of World War II, there were groups of Jews actively involved in fighting, standing their ground. And it was a story of rebellion in a way which was a real antidote to what we see in most of the Hollywood movies, which is very different. But anyway, here is a clip. The only thing I need to explain to you about this is that, of course, as is the tradition with these movies, it consists of a bunch of actors talking English in Slavic accents. Couldn't do it in a foreign language. There we go.
There is some foreign language in it.
Yeah, there is. When they meet other Russians, they drop into Russian for a little bit and then come out and go back into doing this, which...
They work very well for me.
Okay, fine. Here's a clip.
We're looking for partisans. What is the name of your outfit?
What is an outfit?
It's an armed brigade.
We heard the Russians are beginning to organize.
Here.
And also in the Lepkanska. Then we are the Bielski outfit. You want to join?
The Russians are fighters.
But you need a gun to join them. They sabotage railroads and kill Germans.
You want to kill Germans? Come with me. Unless you're still afraid to use that rifle.
Stay there.
Stay there!
We must get what we need without killing.
This will not bring your family back.
Blood for blood. You had yours.
And I can still see their faces.
Vengeance is mine. Who said that to you?
Oh, what? This is God's work you're doing now, Zosia?
No, only you can do that. Take a few lives, spare a few others.
We must not become like them.
No, but at least we can kill like them.
So, Daniel Craig, Liv Schreiber, Jamie Bell. Jamie Bell came on the programme, didn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, heading up an all-star cast. Now, here's what I think. I think that it is a very interesting story, and I understand entirely that thing about it's very good to have a film in which this group of people are active, and it's an extraordinary story, and I didn't know about it before, did you?
No, I think in general people will watch it and be absolutely amazed that they hadn't been told this story before.
Yeah, because it's essentially a story of surviving out in the wilderness under extreme conditions, and at the end when you see the sort of the rank of facts about how many people lived out in this community, how they did effectively create an alternative society, yes. It is extraordinary. I think other than that, it's a fairly workaday piece of work. I mean, it is it wants to be a boy's own action adventure in as much as what it wants to do is to draw in a mainstream crowd, and this is essentially what Ed Zwick does. He makes movies that are about things, but he makes them in a way that will play to a multiplex audience, and I understand understand entirely why he's doing that. I have to say that it therefore leaves me feeling a little bit like, okay, beyond the subject matter, it's a somewhat unremarkable piece of work. But the subject matter is very striking, and it's clearly done with honesty and integrity. I know that a couple of people have complained that it takes a serious subject and makes it a bit pulpy. I don't have any problem with that at all. That's interest filmmaking of the highest order. That's perfectly fine. If you want to get a mainstream audience to see that, you have to make it in a way which a mainstream audience will want to go and see. And I do think that people will enjoy it as an action movie. And I think that's an interesting thing to have done, to have made this story, but to have made it as an action movie. It's just personally, I felt that as an action movie, it was fairly standard fare. And I have an ongoing problem, more so in the wake of things like Apocalypto and The Passion of the Christ, in which it's been demonstrated that it's perfectly possible to draw in a mainstream audience to go and see a subtitled movie. The tradition of, and it's the same with the reader, hello, I'm Kate Winslet, but I'm going to talk like this a little bit, but then when other Germans come in, I may sort of snap into some German. I just think if you're making a film in a foreign language, make it in a foreign language. If you're making it in English, speak in English. I don't think that what happens is that Russians sound like they're speaking in a Russian accent to each other. Just do English. That'll work perfectly fine. But other than that, it's fine. You liked it more than I do,
I
think.
I thought it was good. I thought it was very interesting because I have never seen, and there may well be movies that have told a similar story, but I can't remember seeing a wartime of 1939-45 based movie in which the Jews were heroes, as opposed to victims, because they're always victims. They would tell the same side of the story.
But you're absolutely agreeing.
Daniel Craig was really good, very strong, and Jamie Bell is fantastic.
Jamie Bell is a very fine. He's a good cast. Actually, Liv Schreiber is very good as well. I mean, he's a very underrated actor. No, I think they all do their stuff very well. I just think that beyond that, it's not a remarkable piece of work stylistically, but perhaps it doesn't really want to be. But the story itself is remarkable, and anything, as you say, that takes that perspective as opposed to just portraying the Jews as being victims, I think is a good and positive thing.
Andy says, "Dear, what's his name in the thingamajig? Just watched Defiance, was fully expecting to dislike James Bond in it after the rubbish Quantum of Sausages.
That's not his fault.
It is excellent, and I'm going to make my partner's kids watch it because I think it's the sort of thing that they should know about.
Here we go.
Just thought you might be interested in my uninformed opinion."
No, that's fine, and I completely appreciate that. In fact, it may be that all my criticisms of it are entirely built into its DNA on purpose, that it is a nuts and bolts action movie in order to be acceptable to a mainstream audience.
Mike says, "I think Marcus found his true role in life as a Kate Hudson impersonator in Bride Wars. He can do the puckered lips great, and he can easily do that now I'm fat bit after eating the chocolate." Mind you, after his review, ever be able to see the film. Oh, never mind. Jeremy in London, BA Honours Film Studies. "Dear Jekyll and Hyde, this is the first time I've had an opportunity to watch the live stream, and I must say Mark's impression in live action has to be seen to be believed. However, what I found most entertaining was Mark fidgeting uncomfortably whilst the clip from Bride Wars was playing, as if his very soul was seeping away due to the fact that he had to relive his horrible Bride Wars experience."
I fidget all the time. I can't help it. I really have an objection to skinny Americans making jokes about being fat. I mean, it really bothers me. I mean, for a start, I think it's really pernicious that people are growing up in a world in which movie stars are telling them that they ought to look like, anorexics. I just think that's really bad.
And just ahead of our next review, Gary Down Under says, "Doctor, doctor, can't you see I'm burning? Just a quick note in case that once movie god Kermode, but now slightly suspect man in the midst of an emotional crisis, dares to pan Slumdog Millionaire. See, the thing is, I'm aware that under his present state of mind, High School Musical 3, Mamma Mia, Time in the City, he's very much liable to, despite..."
Time in the City.
That's what he said.
It's of Time and the City. Time in the City sounds like an episode of Sex and the City.
Anyway, he goes, "And then if on the other hand, he loves this wonderful movie, then forget all about that. Obviously, the real Kermode is back and normality has been resumed. You will find out precisely what the good doctor thinks about Slumdog Millionaire as we build to an exciting climax."
5Live Sports Extra is 5Live's digital sister service dedicated to bringing you more live sporting choice. And here's what's coming up in 2009.
International cricket, including the Ashes.
"Like a gladiator, he holds his bat alive.
One Day International and the World's 2020. Premier League and Championship Football. Rugby League Super League and International Rugby Union.
The British Lions Tour of South Africa.
F1 practice and qualifying sessions.
Here comes Lewis Hamilton.
And Grand Slam tennis, including the Australian Open this month."
To find out how you can listen to 5Live Sports Extra, go to bbc.co.uk/5Live.
We should say hello to Jason Isaacs.
Hello to Jason Isaacs.
Hello to Dave Morrissey, not the next Doctor.
No, and I was there was wailing and gnashing of teeth in our house.
You've
when
already
that happened.
Said this because you were talking to Nikki and Campbell. Sheila. Hello to all members of Fairport
so
Convention
cross.
Focus and Stephen Fry as well, and maybe a new addition now to our small society of friends. On Thursday's programme, next week, going to be interviewing Michael Sheen, which we've, I've recorded already. It's Frost Nixon, of course, and he came in, so he took advantage of it, and guess what? Here's a little bit.
So I downloaded all these podcasts, and one of which, my favourite one, I'd have to say, is you and Mark's.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah, so I would sit there listening to these podcasts, and then at some point I did, weirdly, I remember thinking, they're going to review this film that I'm now making. What if Mark and Simon hate it, and I will be so addicted to these podcasts that I'll have to listen to them slagging me off about this film?
It is an uncomfortable experience. But then actors have come in and said and confessed how much they want to punch Mark.
I don't. I want to go up to him and give him a lovely hug and a little tickle under the chin.
Do you?
Yeah.
What? Because you're afraid he might say something bad about the film?
No, because, I love it because he's so honest about what he likes. And he says what he feels about everything, and whether he likes it or not, it's still really entertaining to listen to him. So I just think he's fantastic, and I think you're like an old married couple together.
It has been said.
Yeah, I'm sure it has.
Kind of a more, that's sort of more common wise thing. Yeah. But can I say we've never got into the same bed together?
That's not true, listeners. They are actually here in the studio in bed together now.
That's why we have a vodcast, so you can see that that's not
that's
true.
That's not true. It's Michael Sheen. You can hear that interview in full on Thursday's programme, Frost Nixon.
Frost Nixon. God, he's such a nice guy. It's a shame the movie stinks. No, of course it doesn't.
Well, what'd you say that for?
Because what else can you say off the back of that other than, you know, be rude? Of course it doesn't.
Now,
but I've already said that. I think I've already, because I saw it last year. Anyway,
we need to press on because, look, there's 6.5 minutes before the end of the programme and there is an interesting new movie that
let's
comes
do
out
Slumdog.
With Danny Boyle.
Okay, I don't think there's much need in setting it up. So very quickly, it's Danny Boyle's new film stars Dev Patel as a street kid from Mumbai who finds himself on the Indian version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Here's a clip.
And what type of call centre would that be?
XL5 mobile phones.
Oh, so you're the one who calls me up every single day of my life with special offers, huh?
No. Actually, I'm an assistant.
An assistant phone basher? And what does an assistant phone basher do exactly?
I get tea for people and...
Chaiwala. A chaiwala! Well, ladies and gentlemen, Jamal Malik, garwa garam chai dene wala from Mumbai. Let's play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
And of course, what happens is at the beginning of the movie, we find him one question away from winning the. Are you looking at me or are you looking somewhere else?
No, I'm looking at television.
Right, can you not? Can you look at me?
Okay.
We find him one question away from winning the £1 million prize. Because they've had to take a break overnight and he is being questioned by the police who think he's cheating. The question is
can
he cheating?
Can I have my face at you but also with my eyes on the television?
Yeah, I don't know what's going on the television, but it's very... Is he cheating? Is he a genius? Is something weird happening or is he just very, very lucky? Okay? Now, a number of things to say about the film. The first one is, I'm slightly confused by the publicity campaign, which is on the side of a bus. It's a great big picture of, you know, smiling, happy couple being showered with confetti.
Like it's a Mamma Mia poster.
Exactly. And it says Slumdog Millionaire, the field dog film of the year. Now,
how many field dog films?
How many
are
field
there?
Dog, yes, exactly. And it's a weird thing because when you first talked to Danny Boyle about the film, before I'd seen it, and one of the things that he was talking about was there is stuff at the beginning of the film that is tough because the film is about street kids growing up in Mumbai and he does not shy away from showing very, very rough forms of abuse of children.
Well, it's torture, isn't it?
It is. Well, torture of Dev Patel, but also of the kids growing up and being taken into the orphanage, appalling things happening to them. There's almost a reprise of the train spotting down the toilet scene, although it's done slightly more comedically. I mean, it's tough. Now, I remember when I first saw Trainspotting and thinking, blimey, that's a tough movie. There's all that stuff about, you know, the baby crawling on the ceiling and the soiled sheets and the heroin. It's tough. And then I saw the posters thinking, that's very clever. What they've done is they've somehow got the enthusiasm, the vibrancy of the film across, but without I think, turning it into something else. Now, I have to say, in the case of Slumdog Millionaire, I'm not convinced that if you go and see it thinking that it's going to be the smiley, happy, feel-good film of the year with two people smiley, happy, embracing with confetti falling down them, you're not going to be slightly taken aback by just how rough it is at the beginning. The triumph of Danny Boyle's work for me is this, that what he's always done, whether it's in Trainspotting or in this, is he gets a real street, you know, right down on the ground level view of the world, but he never makes it anything less than visually enthralling and exciting. So you feel the vibrancy of the world even as you understand the harsh reality of it. I think it was absolutely true of Trainspotting, which was a film about people in the throes of heroin addiction and death and misery and squalor, but it was still an exciting, vibrant film. And there are large sections of this in which he's right down in the dirt of really total squalid poverty and people being treated appallingly badly and being abused by the police and being abused by the orphanage and, you know, all this stuff is happening, and yet it's still a vibrant film. That, for me, is what marks Danny Boyle out as an exceptional filmmaker. I trust his honesty and integrity. I mean, I think that he's somebody who genuinely cares for his characters, genuinely cares for the environment of his characters, and genuinely cares about the story. So all those things are true. But I don't think, and I came out of the film feeling very good, but I don't think that makes it a feel-good movie, which I think undersells the roughness of it. First point. Second point is, some people have said, well, the story is... you know, it kind of defies credibility. It's not, you know, it's not credible the way all these coincidences fit together. Here's my take on the story. I think it's a fable. I think it's quite clearly a fable. Right from the very beginning, it almost declares itself to be a sort of a fabulous tale. And I think that as soon as you understand that about it, or as soon as you accept that about it, it amazes me that people don't see that straight away. All those questions about whether or not this stuff, you know, could actually happen seem to drift into inconsequentiality. The thing about it is, it's a film in which absurd coincidences, in which really, really, you know, ridiculous crisscrossings of path come together in a way which is magical. That's the whole basis of it. Because Danny Boyle himself said that he was asking some of the cast whether they'd like to see a Bollywood version of this, and they said, well, if you did make a Bollywood version of it, the coincidence would have to be more absurd. The crisscrossing would have to be, you know, more crazy. It would have to be cranked up even more than it is. I really liked it. I think it's Boyle's best work in a very, very long time. I think Dev Patel is a terrific screen newcomer. I confess I hadn't seen him on screen in Skins.
In Skins, yes, that's what you did.
You and I did a quiz with him over the Christmas holidays, and he seemed like a very, very nice kid.
And he was on again yesterday with Anil Kapoor.
Oh, yes,
and,
he was great.
And people just listened, and in general, they thought he was... I mean, he's like a bouncy puppy. He's so enthusiastic about this film. And you're absolutely right. In fact, we had a caller through to Dev Patel who said, I love the film. It's not a feel-good movie.
No, well, good, fine. Yeah. Well, in that case, they're quite right. But it's, you know, I think that's the triumph of it. And funnily enough, although I understand that the publicity campaign is trying to draw in everybody, if you're like me, the kind of person who would be put off by that poster, don't be put off by that publicity campaign, because that's not the film that it is. It's much, much darker than that. It's much, much rougher than that. And that's why, when it comes through in this kind of, you know, fable-like, almost fairy tale ending, it works. And as we all know, because he's talked about it before anyway, there's a final sequence when they do burst into song and dance, which is partly a sort of generic nod towards Bollywood movie, but it's partly because you kind of feel that the film has achieved that sort of fabulous level and it deserves it. I really, really liked it.
And the movie of the week then?
Well, Slumdog Millionaire, clearly. It's a real shame we didn't get to talk about Stuck, but we must talk about it next week, which is the Stuart Gordon movie. It's an exploitation movie about a guy who gets stuck in a windshield, and it's really, if you like exploitation movies, I really liked it, but Slumdog is clearly the film of the week.
Okay, we'll do that next week.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Thanks for listening. For more movie talk with me or to watch the review of the week, go to the Kermode Uncut blog at bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode.